And welcome to Ghost to Ghost. I'm looking forward to this 3 hours of your ghostly stories. And welcome to Ghost to Ghost. I'm looking forward to this 3 hours of your ghostly stories and a few surprises tossed in. So gather around the campfire and just enjoy yourself, or maybe snuggle up in your bedroom, wherever you may be. And if you happen to be out driving your truck or wherever you are outside, well, just enjoy yourself as well. If you happen to have a computer, go to the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at the Digicam. There's an icon there. You'll see that. Just click that. Guess who the producer is that is wearing a mask that I bought some time ago from the guy who made the Bigfoot hoax costume. You remember that? Well, he's got a company. And before I even knew he was the guy, I ordered this mask from him. It's one of the most hideous ones I've ever seen. Well, take a guess at who that is. It's not me, but there it is for you at the Digicam icon at coasttocoastam.com. Hey, you know, the Spielberg film Poltergeist was cursed with the deaths of cast members. And this isn't really an urban legend. It's interesting and it's true. And the film The Exorcist was also plagued with problems, but that will be another story. Now, the story, the unusual amount of deaths have occurred around three Poltergeist films, including three of the stars. These incidents have given way to rumors that the films were cursed because of their content. This seems a little silly, doesn't it? But there are always explanations to curses like this. Or are there? Two of the stars from the first film died at very young ages. Two from the second film at not so young ages. 22-year-old Dominique Dunn, who played the older daughter Dana Freeling, died on November 4th, 1982 at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in L.A. She had been choked into a coma by her boyfriend. And then 12-year-old Heather O'Rourke died of septic shock in 1988 at Children's Hospital in San Diego. What they thought was the flu turned out to be an obstruction of the bowel. Toxins entered her system. She died while undergoing surgery there. And then 60-year-old Julian Beck, who played the evil preacher Kane in the second film, he died of stomach cancer. Like Heather O'Rourke, he died during the period between filming and release. And then 53-year-old Will Sampson, who played Taylor in the second film, died in Houston, Texas, after receiving a heart-lung transplant 6 weeks earlier. Was it indeed a curse? Your phone calls, Ghost to Ghost, next on Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, this is Dr. Morgus, of course, with a poem from my wonderful CD album entitled Hershey Rhymes, one of my favorite poems that I put together. And, of course, on the organ is my assistant, Chopsley. It's called Buried Alive.
Inside this coffin, I must lie and think sad thoughts until I die. They called me dead and buried me. Oh, what a dread catastrophe. When first I realized my dreadful plight, I dug my nails with all my might into this blasted wooden bier. The marks my nails made still are here. My fingers soon wore down to bone. I never had felt so alone. But still, I tried my freedom to gain. I shouted till no voice remained. Once in a while, from overhead, footsteps come to respect the dead. They whisper my name and call me dear. I pound my casket, but they never hear. So now I lie here, cold as ice. How long, I wonder, will I suffice? And how many others are making a bid to tear their caskets and flip their lid?
What is Halloween without Dr. Morgus, huh? His website, by the way, morgus.com, if you want more information on his scary stories. And what's Halloween without you? First-time caller Joseph in Shiprock, New Mexico. Joseph, you have the honor of being our first caller on Ghost to Ghost. How are you?
George Norrie. Good morning.
Good morning. So what do you have for us, Joseph?
Well, I moved to Shiprock, New Mexico about 2001, moved into a rental house, and maybe about the 6 months into the living there, started having a lot of bad nightmares in the house, a lot of ghosts and monsters and, you know, things that make me keep the light on in the house.
And did you have nightmares in the other places you had lived, or just this one?
Not as bad, not even close to this place.
Okay.
Me and the wife one morning were in the bedroom, and she had experiences in the house as well. We were talking about work and what we're going to do, and a looked like a white orb of light that you can see through transparent went from one corner of the room to the next corner of the room, and we looked at each other and said, "Did you just see that?" And we looked at each other and said, "Yeah, what did you see?" And she described exactly what I seen. We didn't know what to do. And later, before we moved out of the house, my little girl started talking to imaginary friends in the house.
And they weren't imaginary, Joseph.
No. It got so bad where people started giving me things, gifts for the house. I started throwing them away, started taking them out of the house because I didn't know if somebody was trying to do something or something was connected. I had people coming over to pray for the house. I'm an American Indian. Some of the family members prayed, had ceremonies in the house, and it would calm down, but it would just come right back up again.
And when you moved out, Joseph, did it go away? Didn't follow you, did it?
No. No, we moved down the road. But the last incident, why we moved out of the house, was my little girl was actually talking and playing in the living room where there's no lights on to somebody. And a couple days later, we were out of there. That was it.
I don't blame you at all. Let's go to Los Angeles. Richard, you're on Ghost to Ghost. Hey, Richard.
Hi, George. First time Ghost to Ghost, either listening or calling. So,
well, welcome to the show.
Good night.
Me too. This is my first Ghost to Ghost as well, so we're sharing something tonight.
All right. Well, this is a story that happened to my friend Andy, and I'm telling it on his behalf. Andy lives in Massachusetts, where I'm from, with his mother in just a one-story home. And about 5 years ago, Andy had a dream of a little girl with very light blonde hair who was standing in the middle of his basement. In fact, the way he described her, it reminded me of the little girl from Poltergeist.
Uh-huh.
Now, unfortunately, Andy wasn't able to recall what else happened in the dream, and he just shrugged it off. But a couple weeks later, Andy comes home from work, and he finds his mom sitting on the couch. And she turns and asks him if he would come downstairs to do laundry with her. And that's where they kept the washer and dryer, in the basement. And, well, Andy turns to her and jokingly says, "Oh, why, did you see the little blonde girl down there?" And at that point, his mother just loses all the color from her face and refused to go downstairs to do laundry for quite some time. Now, the only other noteworthy thing in their basement was this old billiards table that they never used anymore, and uh-huh. They kept the pool balls in the pockets. Well, Andy's watching TV one night with his girlfriend, and they hear the distinct sound of a rack of billiard balls being broken.
Oh.
So his girlfriend says to him, "Do you want to go down there and see if someone's playing or see if the balls are back in the pocket?" Andy just says, no, thank you. And the scary thing is that they didn't even own cue sticks anymore for that table.
Oh, man.
And, you know, another night, Andy's in bed, and he hears kitchen cabinets opening and closing very loudly. And the next morning, his mother said to him, Andy, if you're going to be in the kitchen that night, please be quiet. So it's things like this that kept up over the course of a full year. And actually, the last thing before it ended was Andy woke up in the middle of the night with an itch. And when he turned the light on and looked at his arm, he had the tiny handprint on his arm, like a rash in the shape of a child's hand. And how this all ended was one day Andy's cleaning out his closet, and in the back of the closet he finds a loose section of wall, pulls it away, and behind it there's a crawl space, a very tiny crawl space that only a child could fit into. It's completely empty, though, and there's no trace of anything ever being in there.
Oh,
but ever since he found that crawl space, there haven't been any more incidents and no more sightings of a little blonde girl.
Richard, they kept the little kid in that crawl space.
I hope not. I really hope not.
I hope not either, but it sure sounds like it. It feels like
Happy Halloween.
Isn't it? You too, my friend. Oh, let's go to Concord, New Hampshire. Bill, east of the Rockies, you're on Ghost to Ghost on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bill.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I called about a month ago, so you've heard this story, but I'm going to recap it for your listeners and give you a little update. As I said, about a month ago, me and my friend were communicating over the internet with, you know, via webcam, which is quite common these days. It began just like every other night, where we've, you know, gotten on and said our hellos and our different greetings and whatnot. And just recently, I moved in to an apartment, and I have a roommate. And my friend knew this, that it was an older woman or whatnot. And so we were first getting connected on the with our webcams. And she said, oh, who's the old lady? Kind of jokingly, you know, I guess jokingly. It's kind of hard to tell, I guess, over chat. But I really, at the time, I didn't really think much of it, I guess. And about 5 minutes later, after we were having our talks or whatnot, because I never really answered her question because I thought she might have been joking or something like that. And in the back of my mind, I'm like thinking, why'd she say that? I just started getting this weird feeling. And I said, why did you ask about an old lady? And she goes, oh, I saw your roommate behind you. She was just like, you know, looked like she was watching what you're typing. I said, what do you mean?
Yeah, what roommate?
My roommate was in the house, but, you know, my door was completely closed. There's no one in there but myself. And at this point, I almost start freaking out. The hair on the back of my neck starts, you know, sticking up, and I'm looking behind me. I'm seeing nothing. At the time, she sees nothing either, but for a moment, she saw someone behind me. And honestly, I really do believe her. She's the sweetest girl there is. And after maybe about 30 minutes or so, she didn't really want to talk about it. That's the thing. After I told her no one was there, she's like, oh, I must have saw something.
It bothered her, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And then I started to ask her a little bit more about it. And then she actually kind of confessed that sometimes she sees things that other people do not see. Now, the odd thing to me, you know, I've heard of this before, not, you know, to be honest, I didn't think it was possible to see it over a webcam. And
you would think not, Bill. That's incredible.
The last time I talked to you, you gave me advice of, you know, possibly researching or showing her possible family members, because I actually thought I was kind of thinking that maybe it was my grandmother or something
like
that.
It's very possible.
And at the time you said, you know, maybe I should show her a picture of my grandmother. Well, the thing is, actually, she's coming to visit in like a week, and she doesn't really want to deal with it at this time. So
do
at
it.
This point,
you,
I'm
do it,
keeping it quiet. And
you're not going to show her the picture?
No, I don't really want to stir things up. I think in a month I'm actually going to start researching on the area. And possibly
why don't you kind of do this? Why don't you put the picture out kind of like on the table somewhere and see if she comes by and picks it up and looks at it?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that way you're not pushing it, but it's there, it's subtle. She may look at it and go, oh, my God, Bill, I know who that is. But do it like that. Let's go to our next caller. Let's go to Mountain View, California. Lynn, you're on Coast to Coast and Ghost to Ghost. Hey, Lynn.
Hi, George. Happy Halloween.
You too. Did you have a good time?
Yes, I did. Thank you very much.
Good. What's your story?
My story happened a number of years ago when I was a freshman in college. I was in the photo department, and this was the first night I was printing by myself in the dark room overnight. Now, dark rooms, I'm sure you know this, but they're not completely dark. They have a safe light. They're either red or orange.
Right.
And they're also very hot. They usually have bad ventilation, so they have a fan. But after a while, you know, your eyes adjust, so you can see pretty clearly. So this was the first time I was using large paper, which was expensive. So I thought, okay, I'm going to be extra careful. I focused my print. I put it in the developer. It was completely a blur. There was nothing there. I went back to my enlarger, did it again, made sure it was sharp, put it in the developer, completely blank. I went back to my enlarger the third time. Everything, all of my equipment was turned upside down, moved, stacked on top of each other. I know it seems like a cliche. So I printed it again, went to the developer, was printing my print. This time it was fine. But out of my periphery, I could see right to my right a black shape, a shape that was transparent but still black. And I thought, okay, it's just my eyes. Then I felt behind me something passing behind me, like that wind that you feel.
Yes.
Over and over and over again. And I thought, okay, it's just the fan. Then I felt on the back of my neck absolutely that something was pressing against my skin and breathing on my neck with icy breath. And at that moment, I knew, just instinctively, somehow knew that I was in the presence of a ghost. I dropped everything. I screamed. I ran into the lobby. And we had a lab monitor that worked, you know, not too late, but he was there for a few hours. And I told him what happened. And he said that he had heard footsteps coming down the hallway many, many nights, and no one ever arrived. So this just fueled my fear. I knew there was something in there. I got my things. I went home. You know, I had projects to do, and I was just terrified to go back in. So the next night, I brought a friend with me. I thought that would protect me.
I don't blame you.
We're both printing. And again, the same sort of antics, you know, passing behind me in repetition, feeling like there's someone on the back of my neck, things moving. And at one point, I looked up onto the ceiling, and I saw this black transparent shape, and it was coming in through the door and out through the exit, around the ceiling, over and over in rapid succession. And I said to my friend, "Do you see that?" And we both saw it. And then, George, this is the freakiest thing. We looked over towards the entrance, and it materialized into a human shape. It was a blackish-brown, murky shape, and it was only from the legs down, like from the waist down. It was boots, and it looked like work clothes, maybe from the 19th century. And I could see through it, but it was still very solid, and then it just disappeared.
Gosh, that's a great story, Lynn. Ghost to Ghost continues in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next Friday, I will be in Las Vegas. We'll be doing the program live out there with reporter Linda Moulton Howe. It is an incredible UFO crash retrieval conference. So come on by, because we've got a meet and greet there at 6:30 to 8:30 Friday, November 7. More information on all this in Las Vegas is at www.ufoconference.com.
Hi, I'm Joshua P. Warren, and here is my ghost story. Of course, a lot of people think about ghostly visions of the past, but you might be surprised to know there are lots of ghostly visions of the future. And this particular event actually played a role in me becoming a paranormal investigator. On my mother's side of the family, there were some really rough times living here in the mountains of Western North Carolina back during the Great Depression. And in the mountains, my grandmother, who was only 12 or 13 years old, was really surprised to get a camera for her birthday. And she started snapping shots of everything, as you can imagine. Well, one day her older brother named Claude, who was in his early 20s, and their father, Jack, came back from a small game hunting trip, just rabbits and squirrels and things. And she took a photograph of them standing there holding their kill. Well, they were amazed to find that when the picture developed, Claude did not have a head. They thought that was pretty weird, of course, but they didn't know enough about photography to understand just how weird it was, especially since the background was still visible. Well, as it turns out, about 1 month later, Claude was home with their father, Jack, and Jack was fixing them lunch in the kitchen, and Claude was outside on the porch reading a copy of his favorite magazine called Western Magazine. And they were having a casual conversation back and forth through an open window. And at one point, Claude stopped answering. And so Jack eventually went outside to see where his son had gone and found that there was the copy of Western Magazine sitting there with its pages, you know, rustling in the breeze, but no Claude. Hours later, other members of the family came home. Still, no trace of Claude. Well, they searched far and wide for days, turning to months, even years. And as the old proverb goes, Claude was never seen nor heard from again. It appeared as though he had absolutely vanished in the blink of an eye. What happened to him? Had he been spirited away, or did he get sucked into some other dimension or portal? I don't know, but it captured my imagination. And whatever happened to my great uncle Claude was clearly foretold, his fate foretold in a phantom photograph. So that is a true story, and think about that as you enjoy your investigations this month. Happy Halloween.
None other than Joshua P. Warren. Let's go to our wild card line. Charlie, you are on Ghost to Ghost. I understand you're 9 years old, Charlie, huh?
Yeah.
Well, hello, Charlie. How are you?
Good. So, I haven't seen my dead grandpa for a number of months.
Oh, yeah.
Single times, from like a month to 2 months to 3 months, month after month, like 4 months to 5 months. And it just keeps on coming to me. And then
where do you see him, Charlie? Is he like hanging around, talking to you?
No, he just like pops up. Like, can like be in a whole other situation. Like, say I was playing soccer, and then I could turn around after practice, and I could see him there, like waving to me. And I'm like, I must be going insane to see this.
No, he's probably there, Charlie. Charlie, let me ask you: did you know him when you were a little boy? Was he still alive then?
He's still alive. Then he died a couple months ago.
Okay.
He died in about March, and then I've been seeing him from now and then. I'm just.
And did you tell your parents? And what did they say?
They said, "Well, they just said to kind of like, if you want to let it out, and if you don't, just don't.
Yeah,
like, do your decision. If you want to let it out to the whole entire world, let it out to the whole entire world."
And let me tell you, let me ask you, Charlie, how do you like the fact that he comes back to visit you?
Well, I really appreciate that. That's a real friendship from God.
That's kind of neat, Charlie.
I really didn't get to see him when I was a little boy. He saw me when I was born, like a couple minutes old. But then I couldn't see him because he lived two states away.
And well, you enjoy the moment, Charlie. Because, you know, one day this is what's going to happen. You're going to grow up. You're going to become a big guy. And he probably won't come around all the time. But he's doing it now because you both need each other. So you enjoy it, okay?
Okay.
All right, Charlie. That's a good little nine-year-old. And by the way, his father gave us permission to talk to him. We always do that. Let's go to Las Vegas, Nevada. Steve, you're on Ghost to Ghost on Coast to Coast. Hi, Steven.
Hi. Hey, George. Nice to talk to you finally.
You too, my friend. What's going on? I'm going to be there Friday. Come on by next week.
Yeah, I heard. I'm working at that time.
Ah, okay.
I might try to take the day off, but I don't ever get to listen to you because I work nights. So I have to listen to you in the daytime on your stream link.
Ah, okay, cool. What's your story for us, Steve?
Well, about 4 months ago, I come home from work, and I usually get home about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I go get in bed with my wife and try to wake her up, but she won't wake up. Found out the next morning she had taken a sleeping pill because she was, like, having, you know, like an anxiety attack.
She
couldn't really breathe or something. So I'm like, okay, let's go to sleep. And I guess I slept for probably about 3 hours or so, and I started having this dream. And in this dream, I was, like, in the neighborhood I used to live in when I was a kid. And out of nowhere, this tall blonde guy comes over and he grabs me, and he puts this thing over my face. And I start having a hard time breathing. And I don't know what happened. Like ever since I was a kid, I've been able to, I started, like, learning how to lucid dream.
Uh-huh.
So somehow I was able to get the better of this guy. I, like, grew in my dream, you know? And I put the thing over his face. And I started walking away. And I was feeling really, like, tingly all over.
Yeah.
And I, like, fell down, and then I woke up. Well, I'm laying there in bed, you know, just thinking about this dream. I wake up, and, like, I look over to the side of the room, and, like, this dark shadow comes rising up behind the dresser. And I can see the head and the shoulders, and there's, like, these two red eyes just staring at me.
It's coming back after you, Steve.
And he's just watching me. I'm like, what the hell? And I'm still feeling tingly, you know? And I reach over to my wife, you know, from behind me, and I'm, like, patting her butt. I'm, like, telling her, you know, you know, trying to wake her up just so she could see if I'm seeing something or if, like, I'm hallucinating or something. But she won't wake up. I'm like, what the hell? You know, and I looked at the thing for about a minute, and it looked at me, and I was like, all right, I command you to get out of here, you know, in the name of God. And the thing just, like, sunk back down behind the dresser, and I didn't see it anymore, you know?
It's amazing that when you echo those words, they always seem to go away. You think if they were friendly, they'd stay, right? It wouldn't bother them. But when you say God, off they go. Sounded like something demonic. Francis, let's go to you. Where are you calling from, Francis?
I'm calling from Everson, Washington.
Well, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, George. I've listened to you since you took over for the show, and I really, really look forward to listening to you every day. And thank you for everything that you do.
My pleasure.
Well, my story happened in Seattle about 5 years ago. And it's like nothing I had ever experienced before and never since. And
is it one of those that you hope it never happens again?
Absolutely.
All right.
It was a fear that I've never experienced, and I don't like the feeling of fear, contrary to most people on Halloween night. So a friend of mine, Star, and I were going to be flying to Miami for a business conference, and since our flight left really early in the morning, we decided, since we lived 2.5 hours from Seattle, that we would drive down and spend the night and take the shuttle over to the airport the next morning.
Sure. Yeah, that's
right. So we were in bed early and asleep, and sometime during the night, I was awakened with some noise outside in the hall, and it sounded like people opening and shutting an ice chest or something, and maybe tossing beverages back and forth or something. And I rolled over on my side and looked at the clock, and it was 2:09 in the morning. And so I closed my eyes, and I thought, how am I ever going to get back to sleep? I'm excited about going to Miami, and now I'm awake, and I have to get up in 2 hours. And I was really feeling kind of ticked off that I'd been awakened like that. So I tossed and turned for a while and ended up back on my right side again. And I'm still trying to go to sleep, and I rolled over and looked at the clock, and it was only about 2:30, and I was laying there, and all of a sudden, the room got really, 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 really still, and I got a really loud, shrieky buzzing in my ears. And about the same time that that happened, an arm went around from the back of me, went around my chest, and kind of tucked under the arm that was laying against the bed. And I was pinned down. And there was, and I felt the other arm was across my back, and I was just totally and completely pinned down. And I was just full of total and complete instant fear. Even as I talk about it now, I still feel a lot of that emotion come up.
Francis, was there a moment where you thought somebody had broken in?
Absolutely. I thought there was somebody in the room, and as I laid there with my mind racing, I was pretty sure that the Seattle papers the next morning were going to be reporting a woman had been killed in a...
Oh, gosh.
I was sure that I was facing imminent death. And my heart, instead of racing, felt like it had almost stopped beating. And my, you know how when you get startled, your stomach kind of falls to your knees? I had that feeling, and it wouldn't go away. And so as my mind was racing, I knew this person was strong. He had me pinned down, and I knew that I couldn't fight against him. I wasn't strong enough. And I knew I had to use my mind. And so I was racing, what can I do? What can I do? Well, I had been actually, you had been having programs on not too long before that about people communicating long distance with each other. And I think there'd been some Heart Math Institute information
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, I'm going to communicate with this person. And so I started sending him thoughts and saying, you don't need to do this. You can get up and walk out of the room. Nobody's going to know you're here.
Man, you became proactive in this thing.
Well, there wasn't anything else I could do, and thankfully, that's what dropped into my mind at that point. Well, nothing was happening. I thought he was still holding me as tightly as he had been, and it dropped into my mind, okay, just send him love. And I believe that our minds consciously communicate with each other and unconsciously or subconsciously communicate with each other too. So during this process of sending him love and light, the pressure started to lessen on my arm.
That's incredible.
But I could still feel the arm on the back of my back.
And at what point were you saying, there's nobody in here?
I wasn't there yet at all.
No, so you still thought maybe someone was
there. I still thought
that
there was somebody sitting or somehow right there. And so almost within a few minutes, the arm that was on the back of my back left. The pressure was gone.
But still you're thinking, there's someone in the room.
Absolutely, and I laid there, and I could see stars outlining her bed. And I could hear her breathing, and I thought, I've got to tune my breathing to her breathing and pretend like I'm still asleep. Because he didn't seem like he was doing anything further negative towards me as long as he thought I was asleep. And as I did that, I listened really, really carefully for footsteps or shuffling or a door or something, and I couldn't hear anything at all. So after about 5 or more minutes, I decided, well, I can't just lay here paralyzed all night. I've got to do something. I thought, okay, it's not really unusual for somebody to stretch and wake up during the middle of the night and shuffle around. So I started kind of stirring a little bit and stretched. And as I stretched out, I reached for the nightstand and was thankfully instantly able to pick up my cell phone and continue to stretch. And I stood up and I shuffled around, and my thought was, okay.
Still thinking somebody was in there.
Absolutely.
What a nightmare.
So I am shuffling to the bathroom, and I'm thinking, okay, so I remember putting that special latch on the door that hotels have so nobody can really get in.
Right, right. It's not quite a deadbolt, but it's close.
Yeah, so I'm And it's something that you can see. I mean, you physically move that latch.
Yeah, you flip it over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, so when I get to the bathroom, I'm going to latch the bathroom, and I'm going to lock the bathroom door, I'm going to turn on the light, and I'm going to shut the door at the same time, and I'm going to look at that latch on the door, because the bathroom door and the door to our hotel room inside were right next to each other. And as I did that, the thought's going through my mind, we're on the third floor. And at the same time, I'm seeing the latch. It's still latched. And at that same time, all just boom, 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 star sat straight up in bed and just was just this gasp inward as she sat straight up in bed. And she had had begun having seizures not too long before that, and I thought she was going into a seizure.
Oh, my God.
And I had, in the meantime, somehow, I don't know at what point, I had gotten a hanger, and I had a flimsy hanger in my hand, and I went running out of the bathroom because
you were going to attack this thing?
With a hanger? Well, my friend, who is as close to me as a daughter could ever be, is now in danger, and so all thought of my own danger left my mind, and I went running out there, and there was nobody in the room.
And you looked everywhere.
Oh, I looked in every nook and cranny where even nobody could possibly be hiding, and there was nobody in the room. So Star and I sat up the rest of the night. It was 3 o'clock in the morning by this time. And so we sat up the next, until 4 o'clock talking about what had occurred.
I'll tell you what, it is one of those things when you wake up and you feel that and you can't see, and you actually think somebody has broken into your room to do these things. Poor television anchor woman was killed, bludgeoned to death in her house and stabbed last week. Horrible situation. That has got to be petrifying, absolutely petrifying. Hey, by the way, just a little note. The week of November 16th, starting Sunday, 11 p.m. Pacific time, 11 p.m. Eastern time, 5 nights, our sci-fi show called The Unexplained. Please watch it if you get a moment, or TiVo it. And on the West Coast, of course, the live Coast to Coast show will be underway. So bring the television in by your radio or vice versa and watch both. The show, the television show, is only 30 minutes long. It goes by very quickly. And if it's successful in the ratings, well, we'll be on 5 nights a week. Not bad. We'll be back in a moment. Ghost to Ghost continues on Coast to Coast AM.